Kalin said, "I won't break my oath, but I intend to kill every last one of them."
"Mother Confessor, you must not do that."
"Why?"
Kara's blue eyes gleamed with menace.
"You must leave half for me."
Chapter 24 Richard had stopped to turn back and look at her only once as he ran, just before he went into the trees. She was standing in the doorway in her white confessor's dress, her long, thick hair tumbling down, her form the embodiment of feminine grace, looking as beautiful as the first time he saw her. They held each other's gaze for a brief moment. He was too far away to see the green of her eyes, a color he'd never beheld on anyone else, a color of such heart-piercing perfection that it sometimes would stop his breathing, and at other times quicken it. But it was the mind of the woman behind those eyes that in reality captivated him. Richard had never met her equal. He knew he was cutting the time close. As much as he hated the idea of turning his gaze away from Kalin, her life hung in the balance. His purpose was clear. Richard had plunged into the woods. He had traveled the trail often enough. He knew where he could run and where he had to be careful. Now, with little time left, he couldn't afford to be too careful. He didn't try for a glimpse of the house. He was alone in the woods as he ran. His thoughts were but salt in a raw wound, for once he felt out of place in the woods, powerless, insignificant, hopeless. Bare branches clattered together in the wind, while others creaked and moaned as if in mock sorrow to see him leaving. He tried not to think as he ran. Fir and spruce trees took over as the ground rose out of the valley. His breath came in rapid pulls. In the cold shadows of the forest floor, the wind was a distant pursuer far overhead, chasing after him, shooing him along, hounding him away from the happiest place he had ever been. Spongy mounds of verdant moss lay dotting the forest floor in the low places where mostly cedars grew, looking like wedding cakes done up in an intense green, sprinkled over with tiny chocolate-brown scale-like cedar needles. Richard tiptoed on rocks sticking up above the water as he crossed a small stream. As the little brook tumbled down the slope, it went under rocks and boulders in places, making an echoing drumming sound, announcing him to the stalwart oaks along his march into imprisonment. In the flat gray light, he failed to see a reddish loop of cedar root. It caught his foot and sent him sprawling face down in the trail, a final humiliation on his judgment and sentence of banishment. As Richard lay in the cold, damp, discarded leaves, dead branches and other refuse of the forest, he considered not getting up ever again. He could just lie there and let it all end, let the indifferent wind freeze his limbs stiff, let the sneaky spiders and snakes and wolves come to bite him and bleed him to death, and then finally the uncaring trees would cover him over, never to be missed except by a few. His vanishing a good riddance to most. A messenger with a message no one wanted to heed. A leader come too soon. Why not just let it end? Let silent death take them both to their peace and be done with it. The scornful trees all watched to see what this unworthy man might do, to see if he had the courage to get to his feet and face what was ahead. He didn't know himself if he did. Death was easier, and in that bottomless moment less painful to consider. Even Kalin, as much as he loved her, wanted something from him he could not give her. A lie. She wanted him to tell her that something he knew to be so was not. He would do anything for her, but he couldn't change what was. At least she had enough faith in him to let him lead her away from the shadows of tyranny darkening the world. Even if she didn't believe him, she was probably the only one willing, of her own free will, to follow him. In truth, he lay on the ground for only seconds, regaining his senses from the fall and catching his breath as the thoughts flooded through his mind, brief seconds in which he allowed himself to be weak, in exchange for how hard he knew everything to come would be. Weakness to balance the strength he would need, doubt to balance his certainty of purpose, fear to balance the courage he would have to call upon. Even as he wondered if he could get up, he knew he would. His convulsion of self-pity ended abruptly. He would do anything for her. Even this. 1,000 times over, even this. With renewed resolve, Richard forced his mind away from the dominion of dark thoughts. It wasn't so hopeless. He knew better. After all, he had faced trials much more difficult than this one sister of the dark. He had once gotten Kaelin out of the clutches of 5 sisters of the dark. This was but one. He would defeat her, too. Anger welled up at the thought of Nikki thinking she could make them dance at the end of her selfish strings. Despair extinguished, rage flooded in, and then he was running again, dodging trees as he cut corners off the trail. He hurdled fallen trees and leaped over gaps in the rock shelves. Rather than taking the safe route down and up, each shortcut or leap saved him a few precious seconds. A broken tree limb snagged his pack, yanking it from his shoulder. He tried to hang on to it as he flew past, but it slipped from his grasp and spilled across the ground. Richard exploded in fury, as if the tree had done it on purpose, just to taunt him in his rush. He kicked the offending branch, snapping it out of its dry socket. He fell to his knees and scooped his things back into the pack, clawing up moss along with gold and silver coins, and a pine seedling along with the soap Kaelin had given him. He didn't have time to care as he shoved it all back in. This time he put the pack onto his back rather than letting it hang from one shoulder. He had been trying to save time before, and it had cost him instead. The path, which in places was no more than sections of animal trails, began to rise sharply, occasionally requiring he use both hands to hold onto rocks or roots as he climbed. He'd been up it enough times to know the sound handholds. As cold as the day was, Richard had to wipe sweat from his eyes. He skinned his knuckles on rough granite as he jammed his fingers into cracks for handholds. In his mind's eye, Nikki was riding too swiftly, covering too much ground, getting too far ahead. He knew it had been foolhardy to take so much time before leaving, thinking he could make up for it on the trail. He wished he could have taken more time, though, to hold Kaelin. His insides were in agony at the thought of how heartbroken Kaelin was. He felt somehow that it was worse for her. Even if she was free and he was not, that made it worse for her, because in her freedom she had to restrain herself when she wanted nothing more than to come after him. In bondage to a master, Richard had it easy. He had only to follow orders. He burst out of the trees onto the wider trail at the top of the pass. Nikki was nowhere to be seen. He held his breath as he looked to the east, fearing to spot her going down the backside of the pass. Beyond the high place where he stood, he could see forests spread out before him with mountains to each side lifting the carpet of trees. In the distance, greater mountains yet soared to dizzying heights, their peaks and much of their slopes stark white against the gloom of heavy gray sky. Richard didn't see any horse and rider. But since the trail twisted down into the trees not far beyond where he stood, that didn't really prove anything. The top of the pass was a bald bit of open ledge, with most of the rest of the horse trail winding through deep woods. He quickly inspected the ground, casting about for tracks, hoping she wouldn't be too far ahead of him, and he could catch her before she did something terrible. His sense of doom eased when he found no tracks. He peered out at the valley far below, across the straw-brown meadow, to their house. It was too far away to see anyone. He hoped Kaelin would stay there for a few days, as he had asked. He didn't want her going to the army, going to fight a losing war, endangering her life for nothing. Richard understood Kaelin's desire to be with her people, and to defend her homeland. She believed she could make a difference. She could not. Not yet. Maybe not ever. Richard's vision was really nothing more than the acceptance of that reality. Shaking your sword at the sky didn't keep the sun from setting. Richard cast an appraising squint at the clouds. For the last 2 days he had thought that the signs pointed to the first snow of the season, soon rolling down onto their valley home. By the look of the sky and the scent in the wind, he judged he was right. He knew he wasn't going to be able to escape Nikki so easily as to be able to get back to Kaelin within a few days. He had invented that story for another reason. Once the weather shifted, and the snow arrived up in these mountain highlands, it tended to come in an onslaught. If the storm was as big as he estimated by the signs it could be, Kalen and Kara would end up being stuck in their house until spring. With all the food they'd put up, as well as the supplies he'd brought in, they had plenty to last the two of them. The firewood he'd cut would keep them warm. There she would be safe. With the army she would be in constant danger. The dappled mare walked out of the trees, coming around a bend not far away. Nikki's blue eyes were on Richard from the first instant she appeared. At the time the Sisters of the Light had taken him to the Palace of the Prophets in the Old World, Richard had mistakenly believed Kalen wanted him taken away. He didn't know or understand she had sent him away to save his life. Richard thought she didn't ever want to see him again. While in captivity at the palace, Richard thought Nikki was the personification of lust. He was hardly able to find his voice when around her. He had hardly been able to believe a creature of such physical perfection existed, other than in daydreams. Now, as he watched her swaying gently in her saddle as she walked her horse up the trail, her intense blue eyes locked on his, it seemed to him she wore her beauty with a kind of grim acceptance. She had so completely lost her stunning presence that he couldn't even envision any reason for his one-time sentiment about her. Richard had since learned the true depths of what a real woman was, what real love was, and what real fulfillment was. In that light, Nikki paled into insignificance. As he watched her coming closer, he was surprised to realize she looked sad. She seemed almost to be sorry to find him there, but more than that, there seemed to be a shadow of relief passing across her countenance. "Richard, you lived up to my faith." Her voice suggested that it had been tenuous at best. "You're in a sweat. Would you like to rest?" Her feigned kindness drove hot blood all the way up to his scalp. He pulled his glare from her gentle smile and turned to the trail, walking ahead of her horse. He thought it best if he not say anything until he could get a grip on his rage. Not far down the trail they came to a black stallion with a white blaze on its face. The big horse was picketed in a small grassy patch of open ground among the towering pines. "Your horse, as I promised," she said. "I hope you find him to your liking. I judged him to be big and strong enough to carry you comfortably." Richard checked and found the smooth snaffle bit to his approval. She wasn't abusing the animals with cruel bits used to dominate, as he knew some of the Sisters did. The rest of the tack appeared sound. The horse looked healthy. Richard took a few moments to introduce himself to the stallion. He reminded himself that the horse was not the cause of his problems, and he shouldn't let his attitude toward Nikki affect how he treated this handsome animal. He didn't ask the horse's name. He let it sniff his hand beneath its curled muzzle, then stroked the stallion's sleek black neck. He patted its shoulder, conveying a gentle introduction without words. The powerful black stallion stamped his front hooves. He was not yet all that pleased to meet Richard. For the time being, there was no choice of routes. There was only the one trail, and it ran from the direction of the house where Kalen was, back to the east. Richard took the lead so that he wouldn't have to look at Nikki. He didn't want to jump right on the stallion at first sight and make a bad impression that would take a lot of work to overcome. Better to let the horse get to know him, first if just for a mile or so. He held the reins slack under the stallion's jaw and walked in front of him, letting him get comfortable with following this strange new man. Putting his mind to the task of working with the horse helped divert him from thoughts that threatened to drag him under a sea of sorrow. After a time, the stallion seemed at ease with his new master, and Richard mounted without any ado. The narrow trail precluded Nikki walking her horse beside his. Her dappled mare snorted its displeasure at having to follow the stallion. Richard was pleased to know that he had already upset the order of things. Nikki offered no conversation, sensing, he supposed, his mood. He was going with her, but there was no way she could hope to make him happy about it. When it started getting dark, Richard simply dismounted beside a small brook where the horses could have a drink, and tossed his things on the ground. Nikki wordlessly accepted his choice of campsite and unstrapped her bedroll from her saddle, after she'd taken it down off her horse. She sat in her bedroll, looking a little downcast more than anything else, and ate some sausage along with a hard biscuit washed down with water. After her first bite, she lifted the sausage to him, meeting his gaze in a questioning manner. He didn't acknowledge the offer. Nicky assumed he declined and went back to eating. When she was finished and had washed in the brook, she went behind the thick undergrowth for a time. When she came back, she crawled into her bedroll without a word, turned away from him, and went to sleep. Richard sat on the mossy ground, arms folded, leaning the small of his back against his saddle. He didn't sleep the entire night. He sat watching Nicky sleep in the light of the overcast sky, lit from the other side by a nearly full moon, watching her slow, even breathing, her slightly parted lips, the slow pulse in the vein at the side of her throat, thinking the whole time how he might overcome what she had done to them. He thought about strangling her, but he knew better. He had used magic before. He had in the past not only felt but unleashed incredible power through his gift. He had faced situations of enormous danger involving a wide variety of magic. Richard had called upon his gift to conjure such power as no one living had ever seen, and he had watched as it was brought to life at his conscious direction. His gift was invoked mostly through anger and need. He had an abundant supply of both. He just didn't know how it could help him. He didn't understand well enough what Nicky had done to begin to think of what he might do to counter it. With Kaylin's life at the other end of Nicky's invisible cord of magic, he dared not do anything until he was sure of it. He would be, though. He just had to figure it out. Experience told him that it was a reasonable supposition. He told himself it was only a matter of time if he wanted to keep his sanity. He knew he had to believe that. The next morning, without speaking a word to Nicky, he saddled the horses. She sat watching him tighten the cinch straps, making sure they weren't pinching the horses, as she sipped from a water skin. She took bread from her saddlebag lying beside her, and asked if he would like a piece. Richard ignored her. He would have been tired from not sleeping the whole cold night, but his anger kept him wide awake. Under a leaden sky, they rode at an easy but steady pace all that day through forests that seemed endless. It felt good to have a warm horse under him. Throughout the day, they continued their gradual descent from the higher country where the house was, down into the lowlands. Toward dark, the snow arrived. At first, it was just a few furtive flakes swirling through the air. As it steadily increased, it seemed to leach the color from trees and ground alike, until the world turned white. Visibility steadily diminished as the snow thickened into a disorienting, drifting, solid wall. He had to keep blinking the fat flakes from his eyes. For the first time since leaving with Nicky, Richard felt a sense of relief. Kaylin and Kara, up higher in the mountains, would wake in the morning to several feet of snow. They would decide that it was foolish to try to leave when, they would believe, it was only an early snow that would melt down enough in a few days for them to have an easier time of traveling. Up in those mountains, that would be a mistake. It would stay cold. A storm would follow on the heels of this one, and they would soon have snow up to the shutters. They would be nervous about waiting, but would probably decide that it was now more important for them to delay until a break in the weather. After all, there was no urgency. In all likelihood, they would end up safely stuck in the house for the winter. When he eventually escaped from Nicky's talons, Richard would find Kaylin snug in their home. He decided that it would be foolish to let his anger dictate that they sleep on the open ground. They could freeze to death. He recalled all too well that if Nicky died, Kaylin died. When he spotted a big wayward pine, he walked his horse off the trail. Brushing against branches, dumped wet snow on him. Richard flicked it off his shoulders and shook it from his hair. Nicky glanced around, confused, but didn't object. She dismounted as she waited to see what he was doing. When he held a heavy bough to the side for her, she frowned at him before poking her head inside for a look. She straightened with an expression of childlike delight. Richard didn't return her wide grin. Inside, under the thick boughs caked with snow, was a still, frigid world. With the snow crusting the tree, it was dark inside. In the dim light, Richard dug a small fire pit and soon caught fire to the deadwood he'd carefully stacked over shavings. When the crackling flames built into a warm glow, Nicky gazed around in wonder at the inside of the wayward pine. The spoke-like branches over their heads were cast in a soft orange blush by the flickering light. The lower trunk was bare of limbs, leaving the inside of the tree a hollow cone with ample open space at the bottom for them. Nicky quietly warmed her hands by the fire, looking contented. Not like she was gloating that he'd given in and found shelter and built a fire, but contented. She looked as if she had been through a great ordeal and now she could be at peace. She looked like a woman expecting nothing, but grateful for what she had. Richard hadn't had breakfast with her or anything the day before. His bitter resolve gave way to his hunger, so he boiled water from melted snow and cooked rice and beans. Starving wouldn't do him or Kaylin any good. Without words, he offered Nicky half the rice and beans poured into the crust of one end of his loaf of bread. She took the bread bowl and thanked him. She offered him a sun-dried slice of meat. Richard stared at her thin, delicate fingers holding out the piece of meat. It reminded him of someone feeding a chipmunk. He snatched the meat from her hand and tore off a chunk with his teeth. To avoid her gaze, he watched the fire as he ate his rice and beans out of the heel of bread. Other than the crackle of the fire, the only sound was the thump of snow falling in clumps from limbs not stout enough to hold the load. Snowfalls often turned a forest into a place of eerie stillness. Sitting by the low fire after he'd finished his meal, feeling the warmth of the flames on his face, the exhaustion from the long ride on top of his vigil the night before finally caught up with him. Richard stacked thicker wood on the dwindling fire and banked the coals around it. He unrolled his bedroll on the opposite side of the fire from Nicky as she silently watched him, climbed in, and as he thought about Kaylin safe in their house, fell soundly asleep. The next day they were up early. Nicky said nothing, but once they were mounted, decisively cut her dappled mare in front of the black stallion and took the lead. The snow had changed to a cold, drizzling mist. What snow was left on the ground had melted down to gray slush. The lowlands were not quite ready to relinquish themselves to winter's grip. Up higher, where Kaylin was, it was colder and would be snowing in earnest. As they rode carefully along a narrow road at the side of a mountain, Richard tried to watch the woods to keep his mind on other things, but he couldn't help occasionally looking at Nicky riding right in front of him. It was cold and damp. She wore a heavy black cloak over her black dress. With her back straight, her head held high, and her blonde hair fanned out over her cloak, she looked regal. He wore his dark forest clothes and hadn't shaved. Nicky's dappled mare was dark gray, almost black, with lighter gray rings over its body. Its mane was dark gray, as were the lightly feathered legs, and the tail was a milky white. It was one of the most handsome horses Richard had ever seen. He hated it. It was hers. By afternoon, they intersected a trail running to the south. Nicky, leading the way, continued to the east. Before the day was out, they would encounter a few more paths, used mainly by an occasional hunter or trapper. The mountains were inhospitable. Even if you cleared the ground of trees, the soil was thin and rocky. In a few places closer to Heartland or other population centers to the north or south, there were grassy slopes that were able to support thin flocks of sheep or goats. As he felt the stallion's muscles moving beneath him, Richard looked out at land he knew and loved. He didn't know how long it would be until he was home again, if ever. He hadn't asked where they were going, figuring Nicky wouldn't likely tell him this soon. That they were headed east didn't mean much just yet because their choice of routes was limited. In the passive rhythm of the ride, Richard's mind kept returning to his sword and how he had given it to Kaylin. At the time, it had seemed the only thing to do. He hated that he had given it to her the way he had, yet he could think of no other way to afford her any protection. He prayed she would never have to use the sword. If she did, he'd given it a measure of his rage, too. At his belt he wore a fine knife, but but he felt naked without his sword. He hated the ancient weapon, the way it pulled dark things from within him, and at the same time he missed it. He often reminded himself of Zed's words that it was merely a tool. It was more, too. The sword was a mirror, albeit one bound in magic capable of raining terrible destruction. The sword of truth would annihilate anything before it, flesh or steel, as long as what stood before it was the enemy. Yet it could not harm a friend. Therein lay the paradox of its magic. Evil was defined solely by the perceptions of the person holding the sword, by what he believed to be true. Richard was the true seeker, an heir to the power of the sword created by the wizards in the Great War. It should be with him. He should be protecting the sword. A lot of things should be, he told himself. Late in the afternoon they left the eastern path they were on and took one tending east and south. Richard knew the trail. It would pass through a village in another day, and then become a narrow road. Since Nicky had deliberately taken the new route, she must have known that too. Near dark they skirted the north shore of a good-sized lake. A small raft of seagulls floated out near the middle of the rain-swept water. Seagulls weren't common in these parts, but they were not unheard of either. He recalled all the seabirds he had seen when he had been in the old world. The sea had fascinated him. In a cove on the far shore, Richard could just make out two men fishing. On that side of the lake there was a trail worn to a deep rut over many generations by people coming up to fish from a hamlet to the south. The two men, sitting on a broad, flat rock jutting out into the lake, waved a greeting. It wasn't often one encountered riders out here. Richard and Nicky were too far away for the men to make them out. The men probably assumed they were trappers. Nicky returned the wave in a casual manner, as if to say, "Good luck with the fishing. Wish we could join you." They rounded a bend and finally disappeared from the men. Richard wiped his wet hair off his forehead as they rode along beside the lake, listening to the small waves lapping at the muddy shore. Leaving the lake behind, they cut into the forest as the trail rose on its way across a gentle slope. Nicky had put her hood up against the intermittent rain and drizzle purring through the trees. A darkening gloom descended on the woods. Richard didn't want to do anything that would get Kaylin killed. The time had finally come when he had to speak. "When we come upon someone, what am I to say? I don't suppose you want me telling people you're a sister of the dark out snatching victims, or do you wish me to play the part of a mute?" Nicky gave him a sidelong glance. "You will be my husband, as far as everyone is concerned," she said without hesitation. "I expect you to adhere to that story under all circumstances. For all practical purposes, from now on, you are my husband, I am your wife." Richard's fists tightened on the reins. "I have a wife. You are not she. I'm not going to pretend you are." Swaying gently in her saddle, Nicky seemed indifferent to his words or the emotion behind them. She gazed skyward, taking in the darkening sky. It was too warm down in the lowlands for snow. Through occasional breaks in the low clouds, though, Richard had caught glimpses of wind-swept mountain slopes behind them, cloaked in thick white drifts. Kaylin was sure to be dry, warm, and stuck. "Do you think you could find us another of those shelter trees?" Nicky asked. "Where it would be dry, like last night? I'd dearly love to get dry and warm." Between sporadic gaps in the pine trees and through the scramble of bare branches of the alder and ash, Richard surveyed the hillside descending before them. "Yes."
"Good. We need to have a talk."
Chapter 25. As Richard dismounted near one of his shelter trees at the edge of a small, slanted, open patch of grassy ground, Nicky took the reins of his horse. She could feel his smoldering glare on her back as she picketed the horses to the thick branches of an alder heavy with catkins. The horses were hungry and promptly started cropping the wet grass.
Without a word, Richard began casting about, collecting deadwood from under dense thickets of spruce trees, where she supposed it might be a little drier. She watched him, not openly, but casually, covertly, from the corner of her eye as he went about his chore. He was everything she remembered, and more. It was not so much that he was just big, physically, but he had a commanding presence that had matured since she had last seen him. Before, she had been tempted at times to think of him as little more than a boy. No more. Now he was a powerful, wild stallion trapped in a pen of his own construction. She kept her distance, letting him kick at the walls of that pen. It would bring her no gain to taunt this wild beast. Taunting him, torturing him in his anguish, was the last thing in the world she wanted. Nicky could understand his smoldering anger. It was to be expected. She could plainly see his feelings for the mother confessor and hers for him. The integrity of the walls of his pen consisted of nothing more than the gossamer fence rails of his feelings for her. While Nicky sympathized with his pain, she knew that she, of all people, could do nothing to alleviate it. It would take time for his hurt to heal. Over time, the rails of his fence would be replaced by others. Some day he would come to terms with what he had to be. Some day he would come to understand the truth of the things she intended to show him. Some day he would come to understand the necessity of what she was doing. It was for the best. At the edge of the clearing, Nicky settled herself on a gray slab of granite that, by the unique angles of its broken face, had once belonged to the ledge poking out from under the deep green of balsam and spruce behind her, but over time had been moved away from it by the inexorable effort of nature, leaving a gap the shape of a jagged lightning bolt between their once mated edges. Nicky sat with her back straight, a habit instilled in her from a young age by her mother, and watched Richard going about unsaddling the horses. He let them both eat some oats from canvas nosebags while he collected rocks from the clearing. At first she couldn't imagine what he was doing. When he took them, along with the wood he had collected, in under the boughs of the shelter tree, she realized he must be going to use the rocks to ring a fire pit. He was inside a long time, so she knew he must be working on building a fire out of the wet wood. She could have used her gift to help, had her gift enough power left to light wet wood. It didn't. Richard seemed up to the task, though. She had watched him light a fire the night before, starting it in birch bark, shavings, and twigs. Nicky had never been one for such outdoor activities. She left him to it and set about the small chore of repairing her horse's cinch strap. The rain had let up for the time being, leaving behind the tingle of a fine mist against her cheeks. As she worked at knotting the loose cords of the heavy twine strap back into its buckle, she heard little crackling sounds coming from under the tree. The sputtering and popping told her that Richard had gotten the fire going. She heard the clang of a pot on a rock, so she reasoned that he was leaving water to boil when the fire got hot enough. Sitting on the slab of granite, Nicky quietly worked a tangle out of the cinch strap as he came back out to care for the horses. Free of the nosebags, the horses drank from a pool of water in a depression in the smooth tan ledge. Though Richard wore dark clothes appropriate for the woods, they could not diminish his bearing. His gray-eyed gaze swept over her, taking in what she was doing. He left her to her knotwork as he went about his chore of currying the horses. His big hands worked smoothly with a sure touch. She was certain the horses would appreciate having all the caked mud cleaned from their legs. She would, were she they. "You said we needed to talk," Richard finally said to her as he stroked the curry comb over the mare's rump, whisking away a last spatter of mud. "I presume a talk consists of you dictating the terms of my imprisonment. I imagine you have rules for your captives." By his icy inflection, it sounded as if he had decided to provoke her a little, to test her reaction. Nicky set the cinch strap aside. She met his challenging tone with one of genuine sympathy instead. "Just because something has happened to you before, Richard, don't assume that means it will again. Fate does not give birth to the same child over and over. Each is different. This is not like the two times before." Her response, as well as the compassion in her eyes, appeared to have caught him off guard. He stared at her a moment before crouching to replace the currycomb in a pocket in the saddlebag and take out a pick.
2 times before?
There was no way he could miss her meaning. His blank expression didn't betray what he might be thinking as he lifted the stallion's right forefoot to pick its hoof clean.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Just as he probed the hoof with his pick, she knew he was probing her as well, wanting to know just how much he knew of those 2 times and what she thought was different this time. He would surely want to know how she intended to avoid the mistakes of his past captors. Any warrior would. He was not yet ready to accept how fundamentally different this was. Richard worked his way around the big black horse, cleaning its hooves, until he ended at the left forefoot, close to her. As he finished and let the stallion's leg down, Nikki stood. When he turned around, she was close enough to feel his warm breath on her cheek. He fixed her with his glare, a look that was no longer as unsettling to her as it had been at first. She found herself, instead of shrinking back, staring into that penetrating gaze of his, marveling that she had him. She finally had him. It could have been no more wondrous to her had she somehow managed to bottle the moon and stars.
"You are a prisoner," Nikki said. "Your anger and resentment are entirely understandable. I would never have expected you to be pleased about this, Richard. But it is not the same as those times before."
She gently gripped his throat. He was surprised, but sensed he was in no immediate danger.
"Before," she said in quiet solace, "you had a collar around your neck. Both times."
"You were at the Palace of the Prophets where I was taken."
She felt him swallow.
"But the other..."
She released his throat.
"I do not use a collar as did the Sisters of the Light to control you, to give you pain in order to make you obey, or to put you through their ridiculous tests. My purpose is nothing like that."
She pulled her cloak forward over her shoulders as she smiled distantly.
"Remember when you first came to the Palace of the Prophets? Remember the speech you gave?"
Richard's words were brittle with caution.
"Not exactly."
She was still staring off into the memories.
"I do. It was the first time I saw you. I remember every word."
Richard said nothing, but in his eyes she could see the shadows of his mind working.
"You were in a rage, not unlike now. You held out a red leather rod hanging around your neck. Remember, Richard?"
"I guess I did." His suspicious glare broke. "A lot has happened since then. I guess I'd put it out of my mind."
"You said that you had been collared before. You said that the person who had once put that collar around your neck had brought you pain to punish you, to teach you."
His posture shifted to stiff wariness. "What of it?"
She focused once more on his gray eyes, eyes that watched her every blink, her every breath, as he weighed her every word. It was all going into some inner calculation, she knew, some inner master analysis of how high was his fence, and if he could jump it.
He could not. "I always wondered about that," she said, "about what you had said about having been in a collar before. Some months back we captured a woman in red leather, a moored Sith."
His color paled just a little.
"She said she was searching for Lord Rahl to protect him. I persuaded her to tell me everything she knew about you."
"I'm not from Dahara."
His voice sounded confident, nevertheless she sensed a subterranean torrent of dread.
"A moored Sith would know next to nothing about me."
Nikki reached inside her cloak for the things she had brought with her. She let the small red leather rod roll from her fingers to fall to the ground at his feet. He stiffened.
"Oh! But she did, Richard. She knew a great deal."
She smiled a small smile, not pleasure nor mockery, but in distant sadness at the memory of that brave woman.
"She knew Denna. She had been at the People's Palace in Dahara where you were taken after Denna captured you. She knew all about it."
Richard's gaze fell away. On bended knee, he reverently picked the red leather rod off the wet ground.
He wiped the thing clean on his pant leg as if it were priceless.
A moored Sith would not tell you anything.
He stood and boldly met her gaze.
A moored Sith is a product of torture.
She would say only enough to make you believe she was cooperating. She would feed you a clever lie to deceive you. She would die before speaking any words to harm her Lord Rahl. With one long finger, Nikki pulled a sodden strand of blonde hair off her cheek.
You underestimate me, Richard. That woman was very brave. I felt great sorrow for her, but there were things I wanted to know. She told it all. She told me everything I wanted to know.
Nikki could see the rage rising in him, bringing a flush to his cheeks.
That was not what she had intended or wanted. She was telling him the truth. But he rejected it, trying to overlay it instead with his own false assumptions.
A moment passed, and that truth finally found its way into his eyes. The rage departed reluctantly, replaced by the weight of sadness that made him swallow at his grief for this woman. Nikki had expected no less from him.
Apparently, Nikki whispered, Denner was very talented at torture.
I neither need nor want your sympathy.
But I did feel sympathy, Richard, for what that woman put you through for no purpose but to give pain. That's the worst kind of pain, isn't it? Pain to no benefit, no confession. The pointlessness of it only adds to its torture. That was what you suffered.
Nikki gestured to the red leather weapon in his fist.
This woman did not suffer that kind of pain. I want you to know that.
He pressed his lips tight in mistrust as he looked away from her eyes, gazing out at the gathering darkness.
You killed her, this moored Sith named Denna, but not before she did unspeakable things to you.
So I did. Richard's expression hardened with the implied menace of his words.
You threatened the Sisters of the Light because they too collared you. You told them they were not good enough to lick the boots of that woman, Denna, and so they were not. You told the Sisters that they thought they held a leash to your collar, but you promised them that they would find that what they held was a bolt of lightning. Don't think for one moment that I don't understand your feelings in this, or your resolve.
Nikki reached out and tapped the center of his chest.
But this time, Richard, the collar is around your heart, and it is Kaelin who will be forfeit, should you make a mistake.
His fists at the ends of his rigid arms tightened. Kaelin would rather die than have me be a slave at her expense. She begged me to forfeit her life for my freedom. A day may dawn when it becomes necessary for me to honor her request. Nikki felt a weary boredom at his threats.
People so often resorted to threatening her. That is entirely up to you, Richard. But you make a great mistake if you think I care.
She couldn't begin to recall how many times Jigang had made solemn threats on her life, or how many of those times his hands had tightened around her throat, choking the life out of her after he'd beaten her senseless. Kadar Kardif had at times been no less brutal. She'd lost count of the times she fully expected to die, starting with the time when she was little and the man pulled her into the alley to rob her. But such men were not the only ones who promised her suffering.
I cannot tell you the promises the Keeper of the Underworld has made to me in my dreams, promises of unending suffering. That is my fate. So please, Richard, do not think to frighten me with your petty threats. More savage men than you have made credible promises as to my doom. I long ago accepted my fate and ceased to care.
Her arms felt heavy at her sides. She felt empty of feeling. Thoughts of Jigang, of the Keeper, reminded her that her life was meaningless. Only what she had seen in Richard's eyes gave her a hint that there might be something more. Something she had yet to discover or understand.
What is it you want?
Richard demanded. Nikki returned her mind to the here and now.
I told you. Your part in life now is as my husband. That is the way it is going to be, if you wish Kaelin to live. I've told you the truth about all of it. If you come with me and do the simple things I ask, such as assuming the role of my husband, then Kaelin will live a long life. I can't say it will be entirely happy, of course, for I know she loves you. How long do you think you can hold me, Nikki? In frustration, Richard ran his fingers back through his wet hair. It isn't going to work, whatever it is you want. How long until you tire of this absurd sham? Her eyes narrowed, studying his profound innocence, if not ignorance. My dear boy, I was born into this wretched world 181 years past. You know that. Do you suppose I have not learned a great deal of patience in all that time? Though our bodies may look about the same age, and in many ways I am no older than you, I have lived near to 7 of your lifetimes. Do you honestly believe that you would have patience to exceed mine? Do you think me some young, foolish girl for you to outwit or outwait? His demeanor cooled. Nikki, I... And don't think to make friends with me or win me over. I am not Denna or Verna or Warren or even Pasha, for that matter. I am not interested in friends. He turned a little and ran a hand over the stallion's shoulder when the horse snorted and stamped a hoof at the smell of the wood smoke curling up from the upper limbs of the shelter tree. I want to know what vile thing you did to that poor woman to make her tell you about Denna. The Mord Sith told me in return for a favor. Frowning his incredulity, he turned to her once more. What favor could you possibly do for a Mord Sith? I cut her throat. Richard closed his eyes as his head sank with grief for this unknown woman who had died because of him. He clenched her weapon in his fist to his heart. His voice lost its fire. I don't suppose you know her name.
This is the end of this cassette. This program is continued on side 1 of cassette number 8.